Good morning. So today we are going to finish the Heisenberg story, and if there is time left, I will tell you some interesting examples of how you can find new kinds of reality, a very exciting one, when you have pre and post selection quantum ensembles. So contrary to the Schrödinger story that starts with looking at the difference between classical and quantum kinematics, in the case of Heisenberg, we start the story by looking at the difference between classical and quantum dynamics. And in fact, I claim that if you just assume, or just starting from the point of the different dynamics, you can deduce all the other new features of quantum mechanics just from that one. So I will show you now the line, how you can go from starting with the different dynamics and deduce from that all the other important difference between classical and quantum physics, including uncertainties and interference. In that sense, you can see that just like in relativity, you start with just one principle, which is the fact that the velocity of light is the same for all observers. In the case of quantum mechanics, switching on h from zero to finite, the Planck constant, you just start with the idea that you have a new kind of dynamics replacing the Poisson brackets from commutators to commutators, and from that, everything else follows. So this is just one principle that takes the same role as the velocity of light being the same for all observers. So how does it work? What is the line? So we say in classical physics, we have the Hamilton equation of motion. We have h, and we say that the time derivatives of any observable f of x and p is equal to the Poisson bracket between f and h. Namely, this is the f, the x, the h, the p, minus the f, the p, the h, the x. And you say, we now have a new kind of dynamics, which is given by commutator instead of Poisson brackets, and we write ddt of f, which is function now of the observables, x and p, that are described by operators instead of numbers. And this is equal to 1 over I h bar times the commutator between f and h. So this is commutator, which means this 1 over I h bar fh minus hf. And just starting from this point, I claim that we can have a logical line from which we can deduce all the new features of quantum mechanics. How does this line work? The first thing that we discover about the difference between this equation and that equation is that this equation is always local, and this equation implies true non-locality. And to discover the variables that for which this dramatic thing happens, we look on one question that shows the very, very important difference between this and that. We ask the following question: can we find a function of x and another function of p so that this Poisson bracket is different from zero? Or we look at a function of x and a function of p whose commutator is equal to is different from zero. We find that this thing has no non-trivial solution, because that Poisson bracket is equal to the f dx times the g dp, and if it's equal to zero, either f is not depending on x or j is not depending on p, so there is no non-trivial solution. On the other hand, if we look at this one, we discover something very interesting. We find that if f of x is equal to f of x plus x0, and g of p is equal to g of p plus p0, such that x0 times p0 is multiple of h, then these two functions commute. You can easily check that. That means that in quantum mechanics, periodic functions of position momentum, which I call modulo variables, if this is a periodic function, then if x goes to x plus x0, it will be an example like this. And if p goes to p plus p0, if the function, if these two functions are periodic, it means that what is defined is not x, but x modulo x0. You subtract from x integer times x0, that function doesn't change. So this shows that modulo variables are very important new feature of quantum mechanics. X modulo x0, x modulo x0 is this function. You see, if I change x by x0, that function comes back to itself. So this is the thing that's called modulo position. It's a function that repeats itself every x0, and the same thing for p0. Another way to represent this function are by the operator of e to the I x over x0 times 2 pi, and e to the I p over p0 times 2 pi. These two functions commute with each other. And it turns out that if you look at the new situation in quantum mechanics, like interference situation, where you have a particle that in a vector in Hilbert space, that in the position representation involves more than one single wave function. If we just have one single wave function, that behaves more or less like a classical particle. But once we have more than one function separated from the other by distance L, then it turns out that situations like this, which are the new examples of thing interference, if we look at the deterministic operators from this, namely we look at operators which are functions of x and p, for which this wave function is an eigenstate, and these are the things that can be observed in principle when we have a system like this, then this function must be represented not by power expansion, but by expansion by Fourier transform, namely by modulo variables. And it turns out that this function is an eigenstate of the modulo momentum, this thing that we found there when we asked about this new situation in quantum mechanics. And the important thing is that the equation of motion for this type of variables are non-local. If we look at the ddt of e to the I p over p0, and we have an Hamiltonian, which is p squared over 2m plus v of x, then the time derivative of this operator involves the difference of the potential at a distance L away from where the particle is. So we have now the following situation. We say, we start with a state like this. In the Heisenberg picture, we say that state has a property that if we look at variables of this kind, they are deterministic. We can measure them without disturbing the state at all, without causing a collapse. So we start with this state, and we say, how does it involve in time? In the Schrödinger picture, we say what will happen to these wave packets, they move towards each other. When they overlap, they start to show the interference pattern. In the Heisenberg picture, we say we don't touch the vector at all. Instead, we look at the deterministic operators, the operators that describe observables that we can measure without any uncertainty, without any collapse, and try to follow how they evolve as a function of time, and that will tell us what will happen later when the two wave packets merge together. And we find that the equations of motion for this situation involves not only the potential where the particle is, but also the potential as the distance L away from the particle.
Okay.
Yeah?
I'm trying to understand then, for someone who knows about the Bloch theorem in condensed matter, to what extent should they be surprised or not surprised by what you're saying?
But what you're telling me is that if you are, look carefully at the situation where you have a periodic potential, like in a crystal, you find there is a time derivative of the operator called crystal momentum, which is P modulo P0, where P0 is H over L, and that operates the constant of the motion, right?
Yes.
So people that know about that, we would be surprised that in that particular case they will look at this operator. But I'm saying now, forget about crystal. Just take free particle. And in free particle, you want to describe interference situation. So you have a free particle that in the Schrödinger representation is a superposition of being in two different places. When the two wave packets merge together, we see interference pattern, right? Yes. So I want now to show that the reason why this interference pattern happens is not because we have something that is in both places. In fact, we have something that's only in one place, but that's something that at the same time has also this new variable that knows whether the other switch is open or not because of the non-local equations of motion. So that is the surprising.
Okay, so I'm missing something, because if I take my intuition, from a Bloch theorem, which I agree, it's a special case, but allows me to develop my intuition. Mm-hmm. The Bloch functions are, of course, delocalized over the lattice.
Yeah.
So the fact that interference or transport will involve a delocalized entity. It's like classical waves.
You're missing one important point in the new representation, that I can start in the Schrödinger picture. I can start with these two wave packets moving towards each other, and then when they meet and they do interference pattern, I use now my new idea of weak measurement and say I will take an ensemble of such situations, making the middle a measurement that shows the interference pattern only by weak measurement, by weak interaction. And then after I finish with this, I check whether the particle, each particle moves in this side or each particle moves in that side. So I have a post-selection that tells me now where the particle was at the beginning. And even though I know where it was at the beginning, I will still see the interference pattern. And then the only way to explain it is to say that those particles that are now described by the two vectors as having on one from the past, they have the property, they have the modular momentum defined, and from the future I know where they are, and nevertheless I see interference pattern. So now the interference pattern is not due to the fact that you have contribution to different locations, amplitude that we don't know what we mean. We now have a new language that we say we have particles that we know where they are, how they move, and nevertheless they show interference pattern because the modular momentum that sits here together with the information that passes here knows what's happening there by non-local equations of motion. That is the new idea. And this is a very important concept. So instead of talking about amplitude that we don't know what it means, we talk now about the fact that we can have particles that we know where they are, and nevertheless, we know also another property of this particle that sits together with the noise of the location, and that other variable, which is the modular momentum, has no local equation of motion, and therefore it time evolution will depend not only on what happens where the particle is, but also what happens far away from the particle. And that is a new way to think about interference. So up to now, we had the idea that in order to explain interference, we must have something that moves both through both fields. And that something was this mysterious amplitude. Now I'm saying there is a new way to think about interference. And the new way is to say that even though the particle is at one location, there is another variable, which is the module of variables, that tell you what will happen to the distribution later. And their behavior depends not only on what happens where the particle is, but also what happens far away from the particle. Now, immediately we see from this story that we must have also uncertainties. So we deduce the necessity for uncertainties in the following way. We say, if we have a particle that at this time is in some location, and we see that it has another property, that property is the modular momentum, whose equation of motion depends on what happens far away, then it seems that we will violate causality immediately, because if I switch a potential here and immediately affect the modular momentum there, if I could observe this, then it will immediately violate causality. So the only way that causality is saved is by saying that under these conditions, the modular momentum must be completely uncertain. It must have equal probability for each one of its values, because only then I will be able to observe what happens far away. So then you say, if it's completely uncertain, then you can never observe it. But by having pre and post selection, I can say the following. From the vector that comes from the past, the modular momentum must be completely uncertain. But if I may add the information of the vector that comes from the future, then without violate causality, I can show that I can have knowledge of both of them. So here is the story. The story is I just start with new kind of dynamics. From this new kind of dynamics, I can find an explanation why a particle that is in one location can be affected by things that are far away, and that explains the interference pattern. But in order to have this consistent with causality, I must also assume that if I have knowledge from the past where the particle is, then that knowledge implies that the modular momentum must be completely uncertain. So only when I have the both boundary conditions, which are possible because of the uncertainty relation, I can then have a story which tells me that I know where the particle is, I know its modular momentum, that will explain by following deterministic operators, this will explain the interference pattern, and it will do it without violating causality because I have necessity of uncertainty relation. So I've shown you now in a very, very brief story, you have to learn how to develop intuition about it. But I've shown you a consistent story that just starts with one idea that we have different dynamics, no local dynamics. And from this, everything follows. From this no local dynamics, I find that if I replace the story in physics not by saying what happens to the Schrödinger wave, which I don't know how to observe. Instead, when I have a vector in Hilbert space, I describe it by a complete set of deterministic operators that correspond to all the things that I can measure on this individual particle without disturbing it at all. And following what happens to these deterministic operators, rather than following what happens to the Schrödinger wave, I can find that I can give a different story for all the new features of quantum mechanics. By following those deterministic operators as a function of time, I can explain why I see interference pattern due to these non-local equations of motion. And at the same time, I prove that I must have uncertainties in order for this to be consistent. So I find that the reason why quantum mechanics shows that nature is not deterministic is just because of its non-locality of the equations of motion. So with just one principle of changing the dynamics from the Poisson bracket to the commutator, I can understand all the new features of quantum mechanics compared to classical physics, by following this logical route that I just described. So there are many more things that can be said about it, but I want to have the rest of this session a fun session by showing to you some beautiful new features of quantum reality when we consider what happens when we have pre and post selection. But I will, before doing that, I will let you, I will stop here and have, let you give you the chance to ask some questions about it. And if not, we will have the fun session. So, yes, Harvey.
So far, you've been using only the double slit experiment and not the Mach Zehnder.
It's the same thing, there's no difference.
In my opinion, yeah. If this is the time in which you can show the pre and post selection how they work on the double MZI.
Well, I'm going to discuss what I call the fun example. This will be the first example that I will discuss. Any other questions? Dave, you don't have a question about the story?
Too many.
Pick one of them.
Just a trivial one. Can you go over again what was happening here with the non-zero commutators? It went a little too fast for me. With the non-zero Poisson bracket and the non-zero commutator.
Yeah.
I didn't understand what claim was being made.
Oh, the idea is that if we...
It's zero.
Suppose I take the most dramatic differentiation between classical and quantum physics.
Right.
This dramatic is having, I have a periodic slit. I take a plane wave from here, let it go through, and see what happens just when it went through all these holes. I find that what happens now is, first of all, I know the position model of this distance, because I know it's either here or here or here.
Right.
That doesn't tell me what the position here, but it tells me what the position model L. And at the same time, I know, because this is a periodic potential, if the momentum in this direction initially was zero, the momentum here can only jump by incidence times H over L. So I know here at the same time, in the most dramatic different situation from classical to quantum physics, this is a situation where H module and P module are defined together. So,
I see.
Okay?
So this is. Equals zero, and you meant equals zero, and this was probably
the. Was it?
Yeah, okay. I think that was my question. You had the.
Oh, that was not the question?
No. What you originally wrote down.
Yeah.
Was the Poisson bracket and the commutator not equal to zero?
No, equal to zero.
Oh,
sorry.
So that turned out to be a simple
okay,
question.
That's a good
maybe question. I can ask another question.
Good.
Okay. Here's a much more general philosophical question.
Okay.
Most philosophers who try to think about foundations of quantum. Immediately gravitate towards the Schrodinger picture.
That was a question. Yeah.
And I take it, here's why. The Schrodinger picture seems to be depicting how physical systems, how the states of physical systems change with time, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's what everybody is used to thinking physics is supposed to be about.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the kinds of questions that everybody is used to thinking physics is supposed to answer for us.
Mm-hmm.
The Heisenberg picture on the face of it seems to be depicting how observables change with time.
Mm-hmm.
People often react to that by saying, I don't even know what the hell that's supposed to mean, okay, if I'm supposed to take it metaphysically seriously.
Okay.
There's a sense in which the Heisenberg picture doesn't even seem to be presenting itself as a candidate for a sort of old-fashioned, metaphysically realistic picture of what's going on.
I understand your question. It's a fair question. And there are two sides to this answer, to answer to it. First of all, physicists have to, when they come up with new understanding, they have to teach philosophers how to teach in a different way. So that's one answer. But but there is another answer, which is the following. If you first look not on a single particle, but on a sample of particles, and you look at sample of particles, and you say, suppose these ensembles of three particles that were all of them started with the same state, and the state is something that we call psi of x, okay? And that is the thing that philosophers can think about, okay? Now I ask, what happens to this state as a function of time? And the only thing that I'm allowed to talk about is what is the density of these particles at later time. So I'm giving now information that I'm allowed to talk about the densities psi star of x and t, psi of x and t, at all times, and ask how are those things connected with the original state, okay, in time. Now, so now I say the following. If I want to understand, I can take this O of x and t and look at its Fourier transform. And if I and define this to be rho k of t. If I know of this, I know that. So certainly philosophers will agree that this is also a good quantity, right?
Good, but not complete.
What do you mean, not complete?
I'm not sure what you mean by saying all I'm allowed to talk about is the density of
If you look at a picture in space-time, I first look at the picture for the ensemble. So the ensemble describe something like a liquid, mm-hmm. right, in space-time. It has densities and currents.
So one can talk about its density. Huh? One can talk about its density.
Yeah.
One doesn't want that to be all one can talk about.
Well,
go ahead. Sorry.
Don't be a philosopher. Okay, so I look at what happens to this. Now I can describe this in another way by looking at at psi star of x at time 0 times e to the ik times x of t psi of x at time 0 dx. This will give me exactly the same information, but here I take the original psi and Fourier transform it with this thing. This thing is x of t is equal to x of 0 plus p at time 0 over m times t. So by looking at the Fourier transform of this thing at the original density, I find the same information. So I see that if I want to understand what psi of x means, I should try to understand what is the average of this type of e to the I k times this type of operator. This is the average of the modulo operator. So I can connect the time evolution of the modulo variables in this very picture that you want to have. It's a picture just of the density, but I see that if I look at the original psi and try to analyze it, not by looking what it is at each point, by looking at the average of all the modulo variables on this, I can deduce from this the picture at all times, okay? So this is the connection that I make between the time evolution is being thought about is what happens to this wave to the time evolution of what happens to the deterministic operators. So this is a root, okay? And I think maybe if I teach eventually philosophers to teach it to think this way, they will begin to understand what I mean by the non-local equation of motion. Is that satisfactory as to philosopher?
Here's a way to put the question.
Not satisfactory, okay.
It's one thing, and I think you've demonstrated this amply many times, it's one thing to say, here's a way in which you're going to see much more directly, you're going to be able to anticipate much more easily how the system is going to behave, okay? What's going to happen, what the solution to the equations of motion is going to look like. Okay. That's one. So here are two kinds of pictures one might want to have in one's head. One might want to have a picture in one's head which is going to make it particularly easy to see how the system is going to behave. That's one kind of virtue. Another kind of virtue is to have a picture in one's head which is maximally metaphysically clear. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm not sure. It's perfectly clear to me that you're making the first claim for this kind of picture, and as such, I understand the claim, and I think it's right in all kinds of ways.
Yes.
It's not obvious that pictures that satisfy the first claim best are also pictures that satisfy the second claim.
Which is?
Which is, I want it to be maximally metaphysically clear. I want to know what I'm talking about.
So here we disagree.
Sort of basic
here we disagree about the question, what is maximally clear? Because that depends on developing a new intuition. I am saying that if you say that what is clear to you, when I have a single particle, that I have a wave in space, I'm saying that you are confused because it cannot be clear because it describes something that you don't know what it means. To say that a single particle at the same time in two different locations, you say that it's clear. I don't understand how it's clear because the party has. Okay, but the data.
So I'm still looking forward to the part of
okay,
the picture.
We are going to have in the afternoon, we are going to have a chance to fight more.
And better to move
how
forward.
Much time? I don't have much time left, right?
Mm? Yeah,
For all the fun things.
That's yeah, that's the problem.
Okay.
So maybe
so you have a question there, or you want to wait for the afternoon? Let me tell you just in a few minutes, stuff. Without showing you, let me tell you some beautiful stories of what we discovered when we analyzed a pre and post selection situation. The first story goes like this. I hope that all of you read Alice in Wonderland, the book Alice in Wonderland. Those of you who did not read it, you should read it because it's a beautiful book. And there is a story about Alice that comes to this magic world. And in this magic world, she finds all kinds of animals. She could, of course, talk to them. And one of the animals that she finds is a cat called Cheshire Cat because the cat came from some place in England that's called Cheshire. And she talked to this cat, and eventually the cat gets mad at her and decides to disappear. But it disappears in a very funny way. First, the tail of the cat disappears, then the body disappears, then the face disappears, and only the smile is left behind. And Ellie starts to think to herself, I've seen many times a cat without a smile, but what does it mean to see a smile without a cat? It turns out that quantum mechanics teaches us what it is. And let me tell you now that in pre and post selection, we can read the situation not with a cat, but we take, for example, a neutron. The neutron has a property to have a spin. We can read the situation where the neutron goes one way, its mass, its energy, and the spin leaves it and goes another way, completely separated from the neutron. And this is a beautiful example. And you can look at it under an article that's called The Quantum Cheshire Cat, and you will see there that indeed the smile could leave the particle. In this case, the smile is the spin. And we can do the same thing with polarization, leaving the photon going another way, and any property that you can think about can leave the particle and go separately. So this is one beautiful example of the things that you can do when you have pre and post selection. Another example is the following. You have a very deep mathematical theorem that is called the pigeonhole theorem. This theorem says that if you have two holes and you have three pigeons, you try to put the three pigeons in the two holes, you must be two pigeons in one hole. There is no way to put three pigeons or more pigeons in fewer number of holes without having some of them being in the same hole. Now we have shown
The different. Can you repeat this? I mean, you have two holes and three pigeons, and what?
Yeah, you want to put the three pigeons in the two holes. You can't do it without having to put two of them in the same hole. They don't like each other, right? They like to be separated from each other, but unfortunately, if there are three of them, two of them must be in the same hole, right? Two or more, if there are two or more. Now, it turns out in quantum mechanics, you can have two cavities and three or more particles, and by pre-imposed selection, you can prove that all the particles are in the same two cavities, and nevertheless, no two of them are in the same cavity. Because if you look at the interaction term, which is a two-body interaction, you add up all the interactions, you find that they are zero. Okay? So you can have n particles in two boxes, in two cavities, and you measure carefully in the middle of the total energy, and you find just free energy, no interaction at all. So this is now, the article is called the quantum pigeonhole problem. And you can show that indeed this is not true quantum mechanically. The last example, unfortunately I don't have time to show you all of this how it works. It works really beautifully. And the last example I will mention briefly is the following. You can have two cavities and another cavity sits here. And you can prepare an initial condition on these three cavities and do a post-reaction on these three cavities. And if in the wall here there is a possibility of tunneling from this box to this box, then you can show the following thing that is true. You can give these two boxes to somebody and say, look, at time t1, you are allowed to open this box and see if there is a particle there or not. And I assure you that if I'm successful, you will always see a particle there if you open the box in T1 with a strong measurement, definitely probability, one. On the other hand, if at a later time, T2, instead, you open the two boxes, you find there is no particle here, no particle here, the two boxes are completely empty, even though nothing could have left them. So, and then it repeats itself. So it's a case. We call this the case of the appearing and disappearing particle. You have two boxes. At time t1, if you open, you are sure there is a particle here. And you are sure the particle can never be in the exhibit. But instead, if you open at time t2, the same two boxes, you find they're empty. And the secret is that if in the initial state here, the projection operator here was 1, the weak value of the projection operator here was -1. That means that we can think about this situation as having a particle and having a partner that has the opposite properties of this particle, including the mass being negative. So these two things can cancel each other and leave no trace at all. Not like when electron positron annihilate each other, they leave a trace, which is the mass, the energy that's left. In this situation, a particle whose projection operator is equal to 1, a particle whose average projection is equal to -1, in time, even though they can't escape, because with the tunneling, they manage to completely cancel each other, leave vacuum there, then you wait further time, and they reappear again. So this will be the case of appearing and reappearing particles. These are just very few examples of beautiful things that can be done with PM post reaction. And some of these things are already being tested experimentally, and they may have some very interesting implications, perhaps for quantum computation. We are looking into these possibilities. So the answer, the final idea, the final statement is A, that we can think in a new way about quantum mechanics by thinking instead of the Schrödinger picture that speaks about amplitudes that we don't know what they mean, at least I claim that I don't know what they mean. Instead, we look at what happens to observables and how do they behave. We find that because of that non-local dynamics, we must have uncertainty. When we have uncertainty, that means that the quantum system can be defined by two boundary conditions instead of one. In classical physics, with no uncertainties, There is only one boundary condition. In quantum mechanics, because of this non-locality, we find that there must be uncertainties. There are uncertainties. We can have now, for each quantum system, two boundaries instead of one. And we use these two boundaries to describe the maximum information in the middle. We find that to see that information, we have to do weak measurements so that we don't disturb the two vectors. We do this with measurements on an ensemble of particles. We find beautiful new reality that for 100 years was missed because people didn't look correctly on quantum mechanics. And this new reality, this new weak reality, has many, many beautiful implications, new kind of effects, new phenomena. And that shows that if you look correctly, if you have the correct starting point, you can find out the richness of quantum mechanics in a way that will not surprise you anymore. Up to now, every time a new effect was discovered, it was a big surprise. Having the new way to think about it, surprises will not happen anymore, and it will be the same happy situation that we have in relativity with all the Gedanken experiments that Einstein showed. If we do the right Gedanken experiments, quantum mechanically, you put a solenoid far away from the particle, you see an effect. That's the non-local phenomena. You do the pre and post selection, which is the right way to think of quantum systems when they have uncertainties. Then I think you can develop a new intuition about quantum mechanics, and contrary to what Feynman said, that he is sure that nobody will ever understand quantum mechanics. If Feynman was alive, I bet with you that I would have come to his office, as I have done in the past when we discussed some issues of quantum mechanics. I would convince him that one can understand quantum mechanics. Thank you very much.